This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Australia's number one award-winning show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self.
Hide and seek.
Visit joy.org.au/hide and seek.
You are on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9, your program for exploring sex, sexuality and self. Andrew the Apprentice and Tim are with you this evening.
Good evening.
And Tim, we are talking about polyamory.
We are. And I've had quite a few comments on my Facebook today because I put it out there into the universe to see what people thought. And look, I have to be honest, for myself, I may seem a bit ignorant, but there are going to be people with loads of questions. So what's the difference between a polyamorous relationship and, say, an open relationship?
Let's have a chat to our guests, Bruno and Avron. Good evening, boys.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Very good. So yeah, what is the difference?
Cool. In one word, love, really. I mean, open relationships are, you know, all different, and everyone's got a different way of having an open relationship, but pretty much the whole idea is you have one couple that is involved emotionally, and then it opens to sex with other people outside of the couple. In polyamory, it's slightly different in the sense that it opens up also for emotional connection with different people. It's not as couple-centered. So yeah, that would be the major difference.
So you can date other people rather than just have sex with other people?
Absolutely. Have loving, committed relationship with more than one person.
And Avron, do you subscribe to the same definition?
As far as definitions are concerned, I think everybody who's poly probably holds a slightly different definition. I like to think of it as having multiple intimate relationships at the same time. Honest relationships. So yes, I think that holds true for me too.
Is it a case of the, you said there, the community disagrees a little bit on the definition? Is that
not really? I don't think there's really a disagreement on the core values of it, but
sure.
It's like every relationship, everyone shapes their relationship the way they want.
Okay. Yeah.
And especially because polyamory offers you this potential for, you know, getting out of the box and making whatever you want with your relationships and with your life. It really allows for like multiple ways of being polyamorous, as long as it's all consenting, with a lot of communication and everyone being aware of what's going on.
So when did you guys first decide that polyamory was for you? Was it during this relationship, or have you always been that way? Did someone open up your eyes into this wave?
I'll answer that.
To each other?
So I suppose for me it goes back maybe 10 or 11 years ago, where I first came out as bisexual, and I was part of a bisexual support group at the time. And I remember thinking it would be, in an ideal world, it would be lovely to have a boyfriend and a girlfriend at the same time. I didn't know much about it. I didn't actually know about the term polyamory for a long time. And then people within this bisexual group a lot of them were part of another group, a polyamorous group within Melbourne. And I suppose because I have a lot of friends there, sort of found my way over to that. And I think it was great having that support and having other people that were doing it to actually, you know, open your eyes and go, yeah, it is a possibility to have a boyfriend and a girlfriend at the same time, or to have multiple boyfriends. Yeah.
And what about yourself, Bruno?
Well, I'm trying not to make the whole big story, but when I was a kid, my parents fed me with a lot of those sci-fi American books from the 70s. I don't know if you've ever read those, but all the main characters were so enlightened and they had multiple relationships and they didn't know the word jealousy. Like, it was completely foreign to them. And I felt like that was so, I don't know, that resonated with me, even though my parents were so not into that kind of thing. But after that, I met my first boyfriend, who's terribly monogamous, and who told me, nah, that doesn't exist in real life. So I was like, okay, well, I don't know better. I'll just follow what you tell me. And we had a beautiful relationship, monogamous relationship, for 13 years. And then when this relationship ended 3 years ago, I thought, you know what? I'm all grown up now. I'm going to be wild. I'm going to do crazy stuff.
Throwing caution to the wind.
Yeah, I thought I was the only one in the world, really. I really thought like I was so weird and special. And then I thought, I'll do that. I'll do whatever I want. And then I met Avron a month later and he was like, no, there's a word for it. It's called polyamory. You're not the only one in the world. And I know people and go to talk to them. And then I met all those groups and got all the support from people that, you know, have gone through it and have gone through all the hurdles and challenges. And that, yeah, that made my life quite special.
Oh, that's beautiful.
What are the key hurdles and challenges? What, you know, top two or three?
Well, I would say that there's the challenges from the outside. You've got the stigma.
Yep,
you've got the friends and family and people around you going, but I thought this was your boyfriend.
Was it like coming out a second time?
It sometimes feels a little bit like coming out a second time. So. Yeah. Mm. And I think it depends on how your family and friends are, really. What is weird is coming out to your gay friends who have all gone through coming out and then they still put you through the coming out. And you're like, seriously, guys, you should know better. You've got the stigma of society and more inside the whole thing, you have to work a lot. It's a lot of work. It's work on yourself. A lot of work on yourself that you have to do and a lot of work on communication because, having one relationship is complicated. Yeah. Having more than one really requires a lot of communication skills.
Absolutely. I actually read this book called The Ethical Slut and it was very interesting and there was a big part on jealousy.
Yeah.
How do you handle that?
No one's immune to jealousy, firstly. I think even us who work through it quite a lot, find that every now and again it just surfaces. And usually when it does, it's a little bit of a surprise to us because, I thought I was kind of immune to it for some time and more recently felt it again. And usually for me, jealousy, it comes down to, for me, I need to actually break that down and try and work out what is it that's making me feel jealous. Is there a feeling of inadequacy or a feeling of, am I being replaced or am I not loved enough or whatever it might be, trying to first tackle that, get to the bottom of that, and then the jealousy kind of disappears. But that said, it can only be done through actually communicating. Like Bruno said, you've actually got to communicate with your partner and voice what your concern is. And usually what seems like something massive turns into really a small deal and something that you can easily move on with, rather than something a lot of people feel jealousy and the first thing they do is run away from it or confront it in a way where they go, well, it's either you or me.
Or him.
Yeah, you or him type thing. But in most cases, I think if you actually challenge yourself and actually look at what the real reason is behind the jealousy, you can sort that out.
And I would also add to that there's this contract of society that, you know, if he's not jealous, then he doesn't love you. Or if he's so wildly jealous, then, oh my God, he loves you so much. That's so unhealthy. That's really, really bad. And still, we hold on to that. And that can work when you're in a monogamous relationship because you can go to your partner and go, you know, I don't like the way you talk to this waiter. Don't talk to him. And put your head in the sand, pretend it never happened. You can do that. But in polyamorous relationship, your partner is going to have loving relationship with other people. So you need to work through your fears and needs and all those things that trigger jealousy. You can't get away with not working on it.
We're chatting with Bruno and Avron about polyamory. If you've got a comment or a question, let us know. 0427JOY949 or you can email onair@joy.org.au. Tim and Andrew with you. Bruno, and as you've both been talking about, communication is a key. And you said one relationship can be complicated. You've got multiple relationships to look after. How does your time management skills kick in regards to this?
Yeah, so that's definitely one of the challenges, time management. Well, you have to learn a lot of tools and a lot of use technology.
Google Docs.
Google
Calendars.
But also something that is really important, it's one of the first things that a lot of people that have done polyamory for quite a while tell you is that your first relationship is with yourself. So it's really great to have a relationship. It's really great to have two relationships. And you just want to spend so much time with those people that you love and that they are amazing. And it's just so great to spend time with them. But then you realize very quickly that you forgot to take some time just for yourself. And that's very draining. So yes, time management, super difficult. But remember to put yourself, first. Spend time with yourself and then split the rest. Also, it's not about, you know, being equal in the time you spend with each partner. Everyone's got different needs. It can be a lot of time, it can be just a little bit of time, it can be a lot of loving and reassurance, or it can just be hanging out and doing nothing. So it's not necessarily about time management all the time.
Now, at the moment, are both of you in relationships external to your own, or how does... What's the current situation?
At the moment, I'm just really in a relationship with Bruno.
Yep.
I have recently just come out of another relationship. But yeah, I'm kind of happy just sitting with Bruno. not currently looking, but I'm also not... Yeah, I'm not looking.
Yeah.
And do you treat those relationships as equal to your own together? Do they hold equal weight for you?
I guess it depends on the relationship, really, and how it evolves. There is, once again, it really depends how you want to create and how you want to shape your polyamorous lifestyle. Some people have equal relationships. Some people have what they call a primary relationship and then have secondary relationship, which is sounds a little bit ugly to me because it feels like the secondary person just comes second, really, which is not really pleasant.
Yeah.
But you can really do whatever you want. I know people that are just... have multiple friends, they call them friends, but they're all kind of equal and it's more of a network kind of thing. So it's really up to you.
Joy 94.9.
Your program for exploring sex, sexuality and self is Hide and Seek here on Joy 94.9. Andrew here and along with Tim. We are talking polyamory with Avron and Bruno.
Yes, we are. And we've had some comments on the SMS.
We have. What have people been saying?
Okay, so the latest one is, hi, this topic fascinates me. When decisions have to be made, does it often come down to a majority rules vote? What have your experiences been with your families, etc.? Is it like coming out all over again? And how do you manage the in-laws?
Okay, well, that's a lot of questions.
No, no.
They're
very, very interested.
Which one should we start with, really?
The in-laws. I'm intrigued.
do your in-laws don't know?
Well,
do your
actually, parents know? Yeah, some.
Yeah.
The in-laws
both
all
of our,
know.
Yeah, yeah, both yeah. of our parents know. It's always.
Yeah, it's very comfortable. His family is really lovely and have been accepted like very, very easily. And we went to France. I'm from France, so we went to France last summer and he met my family and everything was very happy. And just, yeah, I think we're very lucky in that respect that both our families are really comfortable.
Have either of your families met another partner?
Well, my family knew, my parents' partner, but that's it. So they haven't met anyone else?
Not yet.
Not yet?
Not yet.
I mean, we my family is aware of my other partner and they ask me regularly how is he and what is he doing and whatever, stuff like that. But yeah, I don't come back to France very often, so I don't see them very often.
Yeah. And the other question that came in there was majority rules.
I think this all comes down to communication, and communication And sorry, I should have put in there a negotiation as well. So I think you need to talk about it, and then, everyone needs to put in their input. And I don't know who makes the ultimate decision. There's someone who wears the pants, I suppose. I think it still does come down to trying to be true to yourself when making decisions, so things you want to do, and I think usually your partners are quite respectful of that and go along with that. It's not always the case. I think just like in monogamy, you know, sometimes you will all disagree. That's my feeling.
Absolutely, same problem as with any couple, really.
So, do you guys live together?
No, that's not the way. Like some people do it like that. That's called a triad. At the moment, the way we are. At the moment, we're more in a V relationship, which is I'm in a relationship with Avron and I'm in a relationship with another man. So I'm pretty much the hinge of the V. But the good thing, so Avron and this other person are not in a relationship, but they're good friends. So right. It really, really helps.
So the three of you would hang out together and things like that?
A lot, yeah.
Yeah. And was it the same, Avron, when you had your previous relationship? Was it that Bruno was friends with them as well, or...?
Yeah, absolutely. Bruno was friends with them. The relationship was a little bit different. It was a little bit more. It wasn't out. It was in the closet, so right. to speak, which made it difficult. Like I was thinking about your question before with in-laws and things. Mm. That was the reason why it didn't go that way. So, yes, absolutely, Bruno was there, very supportive, friendly with them. But, yeah, because the relationship was in the closet, it meant that for other people, they didn't actually know that I was in another relationship. That's maybe an unusual form of poly right there, but, yeah.
It was
still an equal relationship.
Have you guys considered having or raising children? How would you see them fit into the equation? And I say that because Dan from Melbourne has asked, what might be some of the positive outcomes or negative implications for children of parents or co-parents in a polyamorous relationship?
So, well, that's definitely a question that we hear a lot,
yeah.
Even though we're gay. Because, that's a concern of a lot of people. Now, there's not a lot of research that's been made about polyamory in kids, but what research has been made proves that kids that grow up in polyamorous households do as well as any other kids, and even a little bit better when it comes to, surprise, surprise, communication. And also, you know, there's this saying that it takes a village to...
Raise a child, kid.
Yeah. So that's exactly what it is, and there is actually a really good group for people that are raising kids and that are interested in polyamory. It's called PolyTribe. You can find them on Facebook, like a lot of people, for example, create what is called a PolyTribe, which is pretty much several parents that are or are not in relationships raising the kids together, and it's been found that a lot of relationship when the parents are not in a relationship anymore, they still remain very involved in raising up the kids. And obviously a kid that has a lot of, you know, parent figures does really well.
And a lot of love.
Exactly. The more parents, the more love.
Yeah.
Which raises the, as I said at the very top of the show, polyamory's been in the news a little bit this week because Senator Abetz raised it as an argument against equal marriage rights. How does the poly community react to that?
Yeah, so of course that's the question that we hear a lot at the moment. You know, the slippery slope, and now that we've walked on this slippery slope, are we gonna just slide all the way down? So first of all, it's really a little bit odd to be on the downside of the slippery slope and being, you know, with, you know, having sex with animals and stuff like that all together. It's like, oh, really, really?
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a lot of people asking and trying to find a voice of the community to speak for all of us. That's not going to happen. that's definitely not going to be me. But I mean, when all we can talk about is our point of view, personal point of view. And the problem, I think, is that at the moment, politicians who like to find a minority and, you know, use them as scapegoat and fearmonger and just create a lot of tension, they've lost a little bit of their power on the queer community as scapegoats. So they might be looking for something else. And we might be the new scapegoat. So we'll try to be super careful about that. But, I mean, this idea of having poly marriage, it's an important question, because if one of my partners is in the hospital and I can't go and visit him because I'm officially married to another partner, that's a little bit bullshit. And those things need to be addressed. And I think we all really want, what it boils down to is that we want the right to define our relationships the way we want. And we, like everyone, not just poly people, like you, me, everyone wants the right to define what their relationship is going to be about.
Absolutely.
Hide and seek. Joy 94.9.
You're with Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. Tim Little and The Apprentice in the studio tonight. We're talking polyamory, and we have Bruno and Avron in the studio. Thanks for joining us, guys.
Pleasure.
Pleasure.
And we've had some comments on Facebook, and one of them was in particular about sex. And the comments where you get things like, oh, well, you guys are just interested in having a lot of sex with a lot of multiple partners. What do you say to that?
I can take this one. I think that polyamory is not necessarily all about having sex. Yes, you can have more intimate relationships that are sexual, but you equally can have relationships that are not very sexual, that are more like very close friends or romantic friends. The implication that there is more sex, I don't think that's necessarily founded. But yes, there are people out there who do have more. But it's definitely not the defining point in polyamory. I think it's more about having close relationships with multiple people rather than sexual relationships with multiple people.
Because I guess there's an implication that you probably need a high sex drive, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's not the case.
Not the case?
I mean, a lot of people, like, depending on their relationship, monogamous relationships, can be super sexual or not at all. You have poly people that are completely asexual and have several relationships that are just asexual, and that's fine. It's really what you want to make of it. It's not about having a high sex drive at all.
It can be really good for maybe if there were two people who don't have an equal sex drive, where one has a higher sex drive than the other, and they can have their needs met by someone else, and not necessarily in just an open relationship way where they're allowed to have sex, they're actually allowed to form an emotional bond with someone else. I think that can be quite good. It takes the pressure off the person who doesn't have as high a sex drive. They don't feel the need to have to, you know, put out, so to speak. And, you know, and it also means that the person with a higher sex drive doesn't have to be the one kind of, you know, initiating and being denied. So I think it takes a lot of pressure off of a relationship by doing that.
Does this kind of relationship, I guess at first, would there be a lot of insecurities that would come into play? Or, you know, we're bringing other people into the equation. They may leave us and go off into the sunset with that person.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and often when you unpack your jealousy issues, you realize that this is what was lying and lurking under the jealousy, and your brain is just using circuitous way to just reach out and go, oh, look, you've got needs that have not been met or fears that have not been answered. And those fears are, yeah, absolutely, like the fear of being rejected, abandoned, of not being good enough, all those self-worth issues that just bubble up to the surface. So in this way, it is a challenge because you need to work on those things and you need to work on yourself. It's a little bit of a challenge, but you can overcome it.
And what helps you navigate those instances?
Well, I think for everyone who's interested in polyamory, the main thing is don't do it on your own, and don't only rely on your potential partners either. Find a group. There's a lot of beautiful groups out there with people who have gone through all that and who are willing and happy to share their experience, their solutions, all those things. And it really makes a huge difference to be able to talk about those things with people who actually understand what you're going through rather than, being very well-meaning people who have no clue.
And are there a few groups in Melbourne?
Well done. there's a few beautiful groups. I mentioned the Poly Tribe earlier. There is also Polyvic that you can find on Facebook or that you can find on the internet at polyvic.org.au. So it's an old group that's really worked very well, and it's very queer friendly. But we recently created another group which is called Queer Polyamory Melbourne that you can find on Facebook also, and this group is really for people that identify as queer, whether by gender or sexual preferences, so it really gives a space for people to just bring up subjects that wouldn't really be interesting for main population.
So I'm guessing by queer you're also meaning in a way same-sex attracted at some level, because queer, I would have thought, potentially wrongly, but that poly people would still define themselves as queer in some way.
I think not necessarily.
No.
I think there is a little bit. I think queer is one of those things where people struggled to define it, yep. and still struggle to define it. Probably poly is just as difficult to define sometimes. But under that queer label, yeah, I think there are people who are poly who kind of think, well, that fits into queer. I suppose the group, the Queer Polyamory Melbourne, tends to fit more with the gay, lesbian, bi, trans, yep. intersex groups. That definition of queer. But I suppose there is. And I know that certainly the poly community march in Pride yes. March, and yes. Therefore they see themselves as under that queer umbrella as well. So.
And before you mentioned, Bruno, you identify as bi.
Yes, Avron.
Avron, yeah, sorry. Okay. Avron. And Bruno.
Oh, I'm 99.99 gay.
is it a case that, is it more common, do you think, that the people who identify as bi belong in the poly communities, or...
I think a lot of it started that way. Yeah. I think it's easier if you kind of know you're attracted to more than one gender to kind of want to have your needs met and have like I said, a boyfriend and a girlfriend. I know the group that I was part of, the bisexual one, PolyVic, which Bruno mentioned before, kind of spurred off of that bisexual group as like sort of a sister group. And that PolyVic obviously still exists. The yeah. bisexual one I was with doesn't. But that meant that a very high number of the members of PolyVic were or are bisexual. Nowadays, it tends to attract a lot more hetero crowd, I suppose, and that's part of the reason why we started the Queer Polyamory Melbourne group is to have a space where, you know, we can bring up topics that are about polyamory, but maybe a little bit more about same-sex attraction or things that are queer.
And for someone that is... only newly getting into polyamory and want to check out these groups, what can they expect from those meetings?
Well, there's several options, really. For example, the way PolyVix does it, you've got either discussion groups, which are good for people like me that are more of an introvert nature, and things are very well organized, and you just sit with those lovely people and you talk about subjects in small groups, and it's very, very interesting. It's a lot of information you get. It's beautiful. For people that are more extroverts and that need social interactions, they also have social gathering that are way more informal. The way we do it with Queer Polyamory Melbourne, so we're still a newish group, so we're still finding our way. But we've been doing discussions first, and now the way we're doing it for our next meeting, which is on Friday the 10th, so it's just this Friday, it's going to be first an hour of conversation and discussions and raising subjects and discussing them, and then an hour of just, you know, socializing and stuff like that, so you can come to whatever you want.
Great.
So this coming Friday, the 10th of July, you've got the queer poly group.
Yeah.
So where's that happening?
So it's this bar called Palookaville on Brunswick Street in Fitzroy, number 416. It's upstairs, so when you get there, just head upstairs.
And go to Facebook and
there's an event and everything. An you can find it on Facebook, yeah.
Great. So what are some of your key tips for people wanting to explore or just perhaps starting out?
Having a really good support network,
yeah.
Because you're going to face a lot of really unpleasant things from people that are not really comfortable with it at first. So you need to surround yourself with people that love you and understand you and possibly have gone through that. So really meet people who know what they're doing, and then be ready for a lot of work on yourself and learning a lot of new skills that they're going to make your life different, but it's difficult at times.
So this sounds like quite a challenge. What are the positives?
Well, love, really. Love. A lot of love.
Very good positive.
There's plenty of positives. It's first, all those skills that I'm talking about and that you need to learn, they're amazing skills, and once you have them, they make your life a lot easier, whether you're monogamous or polyamorous. So it's a really good thing to have them. So that's a positive too. But sure. It also allows you to be yourself. And a lot of people feel like they're stuck in their relationship and they want to just be more themselves. So polyamory just gives you space to be out of the box, and you can really shape your relationships the way you want. because there's no real definition, no real boundaries. So you can be yourself, and all the freedom, all the love, I mean, that's definitely worth it.
Sounds and like everyone, what about you?
A lot of it, I was just about to say the same thing. I think it's true. Like you get to be true to yourself. You get the things that you want. You can have more sex. I think that we brought it up. It's something that's a big plus. You can choose to have a relationship that doesn't necessarily have to follow the typical relationship escalator, where you start off with a kiss and a date and a boyfriend and then a husband. It could actually be a friendship that goes towards, you know, to boyfriend and then back to a friendship again, without necessarily severing the relationship. I think that relationship escalator, where things have to go in a certain direction, often causes the end of a lot of monogamous relationships. I think in poly, I think it's quite lovely that it's quite fluid, that you can go backwards and forwards, and the relationship, it's quite dynamic, and it's what you want of it at the time. So I think that's a really big positive.
You never have to break up.
Not necessarily.
After putting so much energy in communicating and stuff like that, it would be a shame, really, to break up.
Because it does, as you said, communication, it can be hard work.
It is, but it is hard work. But once again, in monogamous relationship, you can kind of get away with it because society really allows for that.
Yeah.
But in polyamorous relationships, you can't. You really have to do your homework. Otherwise, you're in a world of trouble. But the results are amazing.
I went to Mardi Gras one year and I observed this polyamorous group, and they were two couples that were a foursome. And I was watching them on the dance floor and how they interacted with each other, and they were kind of flirting with other people in the club. But they were all so reassuring of each other and making sure that everyone felt comfortable. There was so much communication going on, both verbal and non-verbal communication. It was quite fascinating to watch. Someone on the outside.
When it's working well, it's really beautiful. But then again, because you have to go through all this communication and all this, you know, also figuring out what you need, what are the reassuring signals that you need to feel comfortable, then you can express that to your partners and they know it. And it can be a simple thing of, you know, coming back to you every half hour and just touching you on the shoulder, just like a, you know, touching ground. And that's it. And that's all you need. But because you've gone through that work, it becomes very easy to just reassure everyone. There's and
another side to it that we haven't spoken about, and that's compersion, which is really kind of the opposite of jealousy. And that's where you see your partner with someone else and you feel really happy for them, rather than getting all jealous and the other way around. So being really excited to see that your partner is ecstatic and loving the person that they're with, and that gives sometimes that gives you a good feeling. So I didn't know of the word of compersion until
never heard of maybe, it myself actually
maybe a year or two ago. Yeah. But I definitely feel it. I see Bruno with his other partner, and I'm really happy for them, and just to know he's out having a good time, that it doesn't bring the feeling of jealousy at the moment at all. I definitely feel the compersion. So
you're on Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9. If you want to find out more about Queer Poly Melbourne,
yep,
search for them on Facebook. They've got an event coming this Friday.
Yep.
So get along if you are interested. Bruno and everyone, thank you so much for joining us tonight on Hide and Seek.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
We'll be back to wrap things up very shortly.
You can subscribe to Hide and Seek's podcast for free. Visit joy.org.au/hideandseek for more information. Suggest a topic, a guest, or provide feedback. Email hideandseek@joy.org.au. Hide and Seek is presented by Andrew the Apprentice, James Findlay, and Avi Miller. Post-production by David Cheshire.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek.
Hide and Seek. Hide and Seek.
Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.